welcome to Tales from the Periphery, episode 19, with me, your host, Mike Whittaker. So just for clarity, this should have been episode 18, but in the interest of getting all the good news about UK Games Expo out, I've suddenly had to defer yet another episode with Josh Jerkson, who must be feeling a little bit put upon at the moment. I'm sorry, Josh, in order to get the UK Games Expo episode out. But here we are now. Before we progress to the interview proper, a little summary on the Peterborough Crown Tourney, which took place a couple of weekends ago, and I alluded to briefly in my chat with Nat last week. So, it all went brilliantly well. I had a great time, which is not bad for someone who basically spent most of his time staring at a computer, answering rules questions, and watching the clock. But I had, as I think I said on Discord a couple of times, I had a whale of a time ensuring that 16 people had a whale of a time, which is really all you can ask for. The details of the winners are on the website. You should find them about two posts below this episode. And the final winner, Colin Grover, will be off to the UK Games Expo in a couple of weeks' time with free entry as the Peterborough Crown Tourney champion. There's about three slots left for that as I speak, so if you want to get in there and have a crack at his title, now's your chance. Furthermore, as regards UK Games Expo, I will be at the booth in Hall 3150 with the Hexperts guys for a little chatter about podcasting in the UK, and that, I believe, is 11 o'clock on Sunday. If you want to come along and say hi, you know the magic words to get yourself a set of free dice. I also may be announcing a couple of other things at that point, which you might want to be there for, and I'm going to keep those under my hat until then. So, without further ado, on with the interview. I'd just like to point out before we start that my previous podcast mic packed up literally as I was setting up for the interview, so you might find that my audio is a little bit icky in places, for which I can only apologise. I now have a new shiny podcast mic instead. On with the show. So, I have a guest. Not only that, I have a repeat guest, and I believe he's my first, and I promise this time not to mangle his name when I introduce him. So, once again, Josh Jerkson.
Hey, Mike. Good to be back.
It's good to have you back. How was Adepticon? This is the obvious and important question we should start off with right away.
Yeah, well, it's pretty fresh. What, 2 weeks ago now, I guess it was? No, it was real good. I spent most of the show hanging out with the Catalyst folks in their booth, talking aces with whoever would listen. I think many of them felt like maybe they triggered my unskippable dialogue, but here we are. Are you familiar with Battletech Aces? But
can I introduce you to the word of our Lord Josh?
Yeah. But no, Randall was like, hey, we got this cabinet right here. We're putting these core box and new starter box samples in it and the top shelf. And here's a section below for Snowblind. And here's a section under that one for Scouring Sands, like front and center. This is the new case with the stuff. So did that. Was on stream a whole bunch during the course of the show. We actually played a couple of scenarios from Snowblind. One of them verbatim, one of them kind of modified. And then we also just played a Scouring Sands kind of impromptu scenario, but using some of the terrain from both boxes, which was kind of neat. I hadn't actually done that before. Not since they were brown cardboard prototypes. Mm-hmm. So that was cool. And then, yeah, we got a lot of really good meetings and conversations at the show. It's nice to get FaceTime with some of the staff at Catalyst when, being a fully remote company, they're not really all together in the same place at the same time.
I know most that of feeling. The time.
Yeah. The only other thing I was going to mention is the other project that is near and dear to me that I work on is Snapship's Tactics. Mm-hmm. And so they had a whole set of demo tables. They were teaching people how to play the game and promoting the upcoming Kickstarter for that, which is going to be a whole bunch of larger spaceships for Snapships. So I was spending a bunch of time with them too.
Yeah, we are strictly a Battletech podcast, but just for you, I'll make sure I stick the Kickstarter link in the show notes for you. So Snowblind, basically, it was from a Catalyst point of view, very much a show and talk about Snowblind. Then,
I mean, that's why they had kind of invited me to be there and participate in the booth. The rest of our crew, Paul and Jesse and Scott, who make regular appearances on Friday Night Aces over on Six Sides of Gaming, we all came down in a car together, four of us, just to literally run the streaming booth for Catalyst as well. So
awesome!
It was a good little road trip, actually. It was quite nice.
Yeah, and so you've been sort of slightly hacking around. I assume that you're sort of playing with the scenarios partly to fit in the length of your available slot.
Yeah, usually when we're streaming at the con, it's like, hey, we got an hour, or usually it's, hey, we got 2 hours to fill, or hey, the next guest isn't quite ready yet, you can have another 30 minutes or something. Yeah, there's a lot of, let's design something that we can have a reasonably cool-looking experience set up, done, in, 90 minutes or whatever. Sometimes they only give me an hour.
Yeah. We were, I think when we did Aces, the beta at UK Games Expo last year, I think we were getting through the the Alpha Strike box tutorial scenario in about 90 minutes or so.
Yeah. Well, if people are coming to it brand new as well, right, it's going to take you a little longer to scaffold it all up.
And in some cases, we were actually teaching them Alpha Strike as well as Aces, which is yep, getting a little hairy.
We saw a lot of that at PAX Unplugged, actually. We ran an Aces demo table there. Or I say we. Really, it was Jesse from Fox who we just sort of put in charge of it, and he didn't really leave there the entire con. But a lot of what he was telling me, actually, at PAX Unplugged is that he was surprised how many people came to play who had not already played Battletech or Alpha Strike. They were coming to Battletech as an IP, as a universe, completely brand new.
Or even not even coming saying, oh, it's the same game as MechWarrior 2 or 5 or...
Yeah, apparently so. Like a lot of people who are like D&D players. A battle mech is a new idea to them.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Which is, it's pretty amazing, right?
That's really cool. Yeah, so let's go and do a slightly deeper dive than we did last time into Snowblind, starting with, I guess, the contents of the box.
Sure, yeah. So if you're familiar with Ace of Scouring Sands...
You ought to be by now, folks. One of our local distributors just found 24 copies, and I think they might be disappearing off their shelves rather fast.
Snap your fingers. All right. Yeah, if you're familiar with the contents of that box set, I will say... Nothing in Snowblind will shock you. It's very much we co-developed this product template, if you will, with Catalyst, and we just sort of said, well, okay, well, how do we make another one, but how do we make everything about it different enough that it feels fresh? And so, entirely different set of miniatures, entirely different set of cardboard terrain. It's snow this time instead of desert. There's some more factory fold-up buildings for Alpha Strike that go with the existing set. There's some walls. There's some fold-up solar arrays. All of the Aces decks themselves, you still get the same selection of one for every role, but they're all different. Every card in them is different. There are no reprints. There are two new roles that specifically work with... two? Maybe three. I forget. But that specifically work with some of the new models and some of the sort of mechanics we chose to focus on for Snowblind. So that just adds a lot of replayability. And of course, this time around, you get three command decks because there are actually three different sides in the narrative conflict you're dropping into. So we needed a commander to kind of generically represent each of them, and they get a pretty big workout, all three. Yeah,
whereas in Aces, you had basically the two different Jade Falcon commanders, didn't you, depending on...
Yeah, this time we've got two different Ghost Bears and a Pirate.
And... about the only thing you appear to need from this is a white battle mat.
Just about, yeah.
Fortunately, I have one.
Yeah, 4x4 snow mat will serve you well, I'm sure.
Yeah, and so what's... I think we touched on this, but I don't think we're... We have the complete list, and I know the complete list is now out there. What's in the box in grey plastic?
Ah, the mechs. Mm. I've actually got... You know what? I'm going to pull the stack of them off my shelf here, because I have them in pre-reprinted in resin, actually.
Sweet.
Yep. They're actually on my painting desk. I'm going to get around to painting them, and we'll probably post them before the set comes out.
I'm guessing these are from the original STL design STLs.
Yes, they are. Well, they had to send them to me so I could make the render for the back of the box.
Right.
And then because they sent them to me, they asked, hey, you know, would you be able to print a nice set and bring them to the show? And I said, yep, we can do that. So we printed like 3 or 4 sets of them. But shout out to our man, Jeremy, who owns Forbes Hobbies in Cambridge, Ontario. He did a whole bunch of 3D printing for us to make that happen and did a fantastic job. He's got, I forget what the printer is. It's one of the newer 16K resin ones. So like, you can't see layer lines on them. Mm. You got to really look.
Some of the new Elegoos are just mental.
I think that's what it is, yeah.
One of the terrain builders I follow on YouTube has just got one of the Jupiter 2s, which is literally about half a meter or more high.
Yep.
Mad thing.
So yeah, let's go light to heavy. We've got yet another Fire Moth. Everyone's favorite clan mech to play against in Alpha Strike. Yeah, to play against, I said. That's actually maybe the most ho-hum of the mechs in the set, and it's there because the planet that the campaign is set on is literally the Battle Mech Factory where they stamp these things out. So it would be very strange to make a box set set there and not put a Fire Moth in it.
Indeed.
Second one, Arctic Cheetah. This is, actually, sorry, I should say about the Fire Moth. The pose is specifically the Fire Moth, I want to say G. So it's got 4 heavy lasers and a coolant pod, if I recall correctly.
Ouch.
Looks a little bit different. The sculpt is actually running. One of his toes is like tip into the base and he's kind of mid-stride. It's a fun new pose. There's an Arctic Cheetah I, which if I remember correctly, swaps the shoulder LRMs for SRMs. And it's a very extra jumpy Arctic Cheetah. We've got a reprint, actually, of the Grendel, which was formerly only in the Clan Invasion box set. This is the Grendel, I want to say A, I think. I'm a little fuzzy on these, actually. And you know what? Maybe I should pull up the mech list. There's an actual spreadsheet that lists them all. Yeah, I'll consult my cheaty notes. So yeah, it's a Fire Moth G. It's an Arctic Cheetah A. We got the Mongrel A, which is actually, sorry, 2 LRMs. It's like a missile boat one. I think that's the one they did. It might actually be the I. Those are the 2 cards you get in the box. I'm not sure which one they ended up choosing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, fun little mech, kind of also slightly running pose. I feel like their entire sculpting team is getting better at doing running, kind of more dynamic posing.
Yeah.
And it's really nice to see that here.
Yes, there was that kneeling wolfhound not so long back in one of the boxes, yes. Which was nice to see something a little bit different from the usual sort of, it's not quite a T-pose, but it's not far off.
Yeah. You either love that model or you hate it. Which camp are you in?
On the fence, just to prove that it's not quite the case. It's still unpainted, which probably indicates which way I'm leaning slightly, I guess.
Yeah. Very contentious model. Then one of the 2 new models we have in the set, the Rasselhag Dominion's Rime Otter, which is a Dark Age era Omnimech. It looks real boxy, kind of like a baby grizzly. Which, incidentally, we also get a Grizzly in this set, because, again, it's one of the Dark Age Rasselhag Dominion mechs. The Grizzly this time is actually the 3. It's the newer era. I think the original Grizzly is a much older mech, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I think you're
right.
This
one is Dark Age, specifically. It's basically the Dark Age version that they kind of made on a budget. Got a little bit better armor. Weapons are a little bit more sparse. But it's very much a heavy mech that's built like an assault mech. It just is a sponge.
It is. 8 jump and 4.42 is not to be sneezed at.
In Alpha Strike? Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Pretty solid clan mech, but the fact that it has a total armor of... it's got 7 armor and 8 internals.
Yeah.
That's what you get on like a Daishi. get that from your Direwolf or your Stone Rhino. Like, it's very well armored for a heavy mech.
Mm. Yeah, it's not quite the level of, oh god, kill it now of some things, but it's not far off, I suspect.
Yeah. So sometimes you just need a sponge,
yeah.
And you win if your opponent shoots it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Moving up the brackets, the Nova Cat, I think, is one of the coolest mechs just that exists. And the Nova Cat B, which is just like 6 LRM-15s or something shenanigan-y like that. We did a Bane last time in Scouring Sands, which was me sorting the MUL by how much indirect fire does it do and picking the one with the biggest number. This time we picked the one with the second biggest number.
Oh, so, yeah, you did. Sorry, I've found its stats. Oh, dear Lord, yes. It's 666, the mech of the beast.
Yeah.
An indirect fire with 5, indirect fire LRM 555. Oh, that's going to be fun.
Yeah. And, you know, enough armor and structure that it's annoying to deal with.
And move 8, which is quite possible.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. There's some Novacats in the game. I think the T, especially, is a 10 move. And that's one of the better variants, I think. But the B is real fancy and looks really cool. The missile pod arms. I mean, this model is actually not new. I believe it was sculpted and put through Ironwood Metals last year at some point. So it's been available for a while, but you know, if you want one in plastic, you're going to get one in Snowblind.
Oh yeah. Yes, they do. They produced an Ironwind. I've just found it here. 2025, last year.
Yeah.
Is it the same sculpt, essentially?
I believe so. I believe it's the same STL file, yeah. Right. They just reposed it.
Cool.
Yeah. And then there's 2 assault mechs in the box. So unlike Scouring Sands, where we did 7 mechs and 2 vehicles, this time it's just 8 mechs, straight up. And so the remaining 2 mechs are a Kingfisher, but this is the Kingfisher C variant, which replaces the left arm LRM pod with an ERPPC pod, basically. It's got it has the arms from a Marauder 2C.
Mm. Yeah.
I think it's actually my favorite sculpt of the new models in the box. It's got a really cool, like, striding pose. And then finally, I think the one that's going to be the really exciting chase model for people and may tip a few people into picking up Snowblind if they otherwise would not, is we get a Viking 2C in plastic, finally.
Mm.
Which, if you're not familiar with this thing, it is 90 tons of hardened armor with sort of Bane-esque proportions. It's got 4 big missile pods.
I'm trying.
On Alpha Strike terms, it has more armor than God. It's like 24 total pips because of hardened armor and 90 tons.
Yes, of course.
But it's very, very slow.
Yeah, the Alpha Strike abstraction layer sort of turns the hardened armor into just madly more armor pips, doesn't it?
Yes. Yeah, so 17 armor pips and 7 internals.
And what are those? That's 2 LRM-20s and 2 LRM-15s?
Something
it's
like
not
that.
Quite as mad as the Bane. It's not quite as mad as the Bane.
No. It's durable. Chewy.
Tell me, how long have you had this thing about mini, mini, mini missile pods?
Basically since I saw a longbow in a Catalyst Force pack and was like, why haven't you done all of this?
Seems reasonable. They haven't done a Yeoman yet, which I'm slightly disappointed by.
Yeah, but the Yeoman is just goofy looking. It doesn't really... It's not big and flamboyant in a, like, I'm a scary boss mech that's going to be owned by the star captain of the planet.
Yes, it always looks as though it's going to fall flat on its face the first time it tries to turn around, doesn't it?
It does look a little bit like that. Like some Jawas from Star Wars have had their way with it and have made their version of a missile assault mech cobbled together.
So, yes, the Viking 2C, apart from the 4-inch move, and the TMM0...
Yeah,
the eight.
All those extra armor pips evaporate very quickly, let me tell you.
Yeah, because it is 866, and it does have case 2, which means it will survive the inevitable ammo explosion.
Yep, you got it.
Yep, well, that's fun. And so no vehicles this time. I'm assuming that, again, there's a few little counters for odd things that turn up in some scenarios.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Actually, quite a lot. There's probably more of them in this box than there are.
I foresee another order to Ironwind in my future.
almost. So I think two interesting things happen, and actually about the Viking, if you're looking at it on the MUL, there is only one Viking 2C variant. There is the standard. And that one did have an Ironwood Metals sculpt, I believe, but it's very, very tall and very boxy. And I think because Catalyst realized they weren't going to do a standard Viking probably for a while either, they kind of split the difference between the two aesthetics. They're kind of looking at the old Viking TRO art and the old Viking metal model, and then the Viking 2C metal model. What they ended up creating for this box set is, I think, somewhere in between. Mm-hmm. It's angular enough that it looks like the 2C, but there's a lot of design language from the original Viking in there as well. So if you wanted the old one, I guess you can still use it.
Well, yeah, they are. I'm just looking through them on Ironwind now. The original Viking VKG2F is a 2008 sculpt.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm assuming again that the 2025 Viking 2C is the same STL as, or is it somewhere between the two?
It's somewhere between the two. I'm pretty sure this Viking sculpt in Snowblind is brand new.
All right, cool.
The other fun thing about it is I was very sad when they published a Hammerhead in the third Star League Strike Lance or whatever it was.
It's one of them, isn't it? Yeah.
Because the Hammerhead only has one variant.
Right.
There is a Hammerhead and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 50-ton hardened armor clan Seafox mech. And I was really sad about that. I was like, oh man, like you have these, every other Alpha Strike card you've ever printed in anything is double-sided. It would be a real shame to publish a Viking 2C Alpha Strike card that's single-sided. So can we make another variant? And I called up Josh Franklin, who is the Alpha Strike line developer. And basically said, like, hey, I want to add another Viking. And said, okay, well, it has to be designed in Classic first and then put through the meat grinder to make the Alpha Strike card. Mm-hmm. And I said, cool. I kind of want something that does this. How do I do that? And so he sent me back a couple of different variants and was like, here is how they translate in Alpha Strike. And I picked one. And I'm sure to someone's great dismay, perhaps the people who will play this campaign, the Viking 2C standard variant I made dumps two of the LRM pods, I believe, for Arrow 4 launchers.
Ouch.
So, yeah, it's beastly.
Oh, that's not going to win you friends, is it?
No. So in Alpha Strike terms, it's you lose your medium and long range weapons, but you get clan or two clan Arrow 4 shots. Yeah. Every turn.
It's the interesting thing though that the reaction I've been hearing from a lot of people from Aces is that the my god, kill it with fire reaction isn't to the Bane, it's to the two blooming fulcrums. No,
it's the fulcrums. It's absolutely
it's that
the fulcrum.
TMM.
Mm-hmm.
It really that
no one ever squishes a hover tank like a bug. The only way to get rid of a hover tank is by repeatedly reducing its TMM through chip damage until eventually it just dies.
Until eventually you can actually hit it with enough pairs of dice that it's going to fall over properly. Yeah,
you got it. Yep,
that's brilliant.
So other units that are in the box in cardboard form.
Mm-hmm.
One of the conversations I had with Randall back in early development and when we were sort of shaping out what the set might look like, I had a conversation about, well, you know, we put elementals in Scouring Sands and, like, yeah, you can definitely play them in cardboard. The actual elemental model that comes in the force pack is not substantially bigger than that. So infantry actually work really well if they're in cardboard. And I said, well, that's great if you have a campaign with a narrative that has a single opposing force, like the Jade Falcons with their, it's Scouring Sands is entirely Jade Falcon. But this one, because of the way the narrative worked out, we ended up just basically pushing for, we're going to have multiple opposing forces. There will be scenarios where eight mechs in the box is not really going to cut it for the satisfying experience. And as a result, I said, well, like, how do we get more vehicles and supporting units in the box? And what we arrived on was, what if you take one of the battlefield support force packs and literally make cardboard tokens of all of the miniatures in that box set? So if you've already got them, cool. Hey, you can pre-upgrade all of your units in this campaign to plastic.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have them or you want to paint them in a new color scheme just for this adventure, then you can immediately jettison eight of these cardboard tokens and replace them with models.
Which pack is it?
It is the Battle and Fire Lance pack. It's the one that contains the Manticore, Vedette, SRM carriers, and LRM carriers.
There's some folks going to hate you for that as well, I suspect.
Uh-huh. Yeah, the same way that I've got, nasty units on the Ghost Bear Tumon. In the campaign, you will find that the pirate forces on the planet of Thule are not particularly excited by having to square off against battle mechs on the regular, so they make a pretty extensive use of the LRM and SRM carriers.
Yes, that's and of yeah, and if you actually go to Dark Ages, there's some quite unpleasant variants there, aren't there?
I don't think there's a pleasant variant of the SRM carrier. It's basically the most points efficient weapon platform in the game, I think, or among them.
Yeah, you're not wrong there, I don't think. Hang on.
There are some really scary Clantech field gun infantry points that might come close.
I just really, it's 660, isn't it?
Yeah,
the C variant, which I'm assuming is what it's likely to be.
I think we use both, because the pirates don't necessarily have Clantech. Yeah, they have some.
But even so, they're both 660. Yeah. It's just the Clantech one has extra narc levels of obnoxious, namely case.
Turret and Narc, if I remember correctly, on the deluxe model.
Yeah, it's a fun little model. So I'm assuming the usual random collection of objective counters and such like.
Yeah. The joke I make is actually, if you put the two boxes beside each other, the only component that's the same is the first sheet of punchboard, the one that has the waypoint tokens, the edge tokens, the turn track, the initiative marker. Those are just exactly the same.
Different set of edge abilities?
Yes, a brand new set of 12 more edge abilities.
Cool.
We actually designed 48 of them for Scouring Sands and then just sort of sprinkled them throughout the box set line. So doing it that way actually was really helpful because it allowed us to cherry pick. You get a nice mixture of things in each box, like some offense abilities, some mobility, edge powers, some defensive ones. And then you would also get a few that are kind of very useful and specific to that campaign.
And then we touched briefly on the campaign last time. You've got essentially three op fours.
We do, yeah. It's set on the planet of Thule, which is it's one of the manufacturing centers in the Rasselhog Dominion. It's the one that's closest to the periphery.
Right.
So if you imagine the Inner Sphere map, the clock, it's basically at 12 noon on the clock. It's right up against the periphery border of the Inner Sphere at high noon. But historically, from past source books, because it is a battle mech manufacturing facility established by the Clan Ghostbear post-clan invasion, it has had no shortage of trouble with pirates on its borders since forever. Because it's basically like, you know, a hop, skip, and a jump from outside the from the periphery in some of the hotly contested pirate areas. So we said, hey, that would be a great way to have some more nuance and some more depth to the storytelling and choices that we offer you in the Snowblind campaign. Because I think everybody rightly assumed, you know, hey, are you fighting the joiners or the deniers? And my answer has been, so far, yes.
Do you get to pick a side at some point?
You absolutely do. And I would say the unofficial tagline for this box is that the road to hell is paved by good intentions. There are not necessarily great choices at any given moment in the way this conflict plays out.
Sweet.
So it was a very interesting challenge from a narrative perspective to cram what is a pretty big idea into such a small amount of narrative. Like, kudos to Rusty Zimmerman for writing all of the sidebars that appear in the campaign books, both in this one and in Scouring Sands. The format's very similar. But I think this time we changed our working process a little bit, and having the first one to look at as a reference point made it really helpful to understand what worked and why, what we shouldn't change, and where the opportunities were to push the envelope a little further. So I think we really did that this time.
I was about to ask you that, which is, what have you learned from Aces, not just from the fact that Snowblind is the second one you've written, but also from player feedback from the first one? What's informed what you've done going forward?
Yeah, keep in mind, some of the player feedback for Scouring Sands is not going to be actionable for Snowblind because it was largely done before that feedback came in.
Yeah, I get that.
Yeah, you probably won't see some of the feedback from Scouring Sands really take root until the third box set comes out, because that's finishing development now, and there's some opportunity to make a few tweaks there to some of the scenarios. There are a few things that in Scouring Sands I feel like didn't quite hit with the community and player base the way I had hoped. The biggest one that really informed how I approach scenario design is the... And I give very gentle spoilers here for Scouring Sands, so if you don't want those spoilers, you can skip ahead a little bit. But basically, there's one scenario in Scouring Sands where you will play it no matter what choices you make in the first half of the campaign. I believe it is Sortie 10. It is the first showdown with Conrad Sender, who is the Jade Falcon Star Captain. There are three different objectives that you can choose to pursue in that scenario, and the objective you complete forks the rest of the campaign, but they are not equally easy to do.
Uh-huh.
And as power gamers are wont to be, they will find the easiest path to victory and pursue it aggressively. And so what happened in that scenario is, of the three objectives, the kind of ho-hum ending is the easiest one to get. And that's the one where you literally, your entire formation on the table just alpha strikes Conrad Sender's Thunderbolt 2C, and then you have to watch him walk away. He has plot armor, so you can't kill him. But the objective is, of the three, it's the easiest to do. And it's the one that, not only is it the easiest to pursue, but it's kind of, the way the scenario is set up, it kind of literally gets thrust into your face. Like, not only is he an appealing target, but he's actually the easiest target, too, at that moment. And so, I think there were a lot of people who... complained is maybe the wrong word, but I think we're a little disappointed that, like, oh, the ending that leads to, or the branching that, you know, happens as a result of, like, this scenario is just kind of a dud. I wasn't happy with how it felt to play. And I got the, you know, this maybe not very interesting ending to the story because I did this. I was punished for being a very efficient and effective gamer. Whereas if you deliberately try and pursue either of the other two objectives in that scenario, it's substantially harder. But I think the endings are more interesting that you get from them.
It's kind of a shame in some ways that you don't have... If this was in some way computer moderated, you could actually see the stats of who took which paths. But I guess you're relying on word of mouth for that.
I am. I've actually had a conversation recently with Catalyst about how we might go about getting that data after the fact. And it's kind of interesting. And not because anyone feels like any business decisions rest upon it, but like just for our own fun. Just because we can. Kind of curious to see how it shaped out.
I know
for sure there are a couple of paths in there that are, you know, some choose your own adventure games have a golden path where, like, oh, if you did this at exactly the right point in time, this happens for you and then this happens and there's, you know, one in exactly one right way. That doesn't really exist in Snowblind or in Scouring Sands. There's something a little like that in Snowblind, but it's not well hidden. You can find it without too much difficulty.
Mm-hmm.
I will say the structure of the way the missions are fit together in Snowblind, like the decision tree of how you go from mission to mission, is different.
Right. And you've got how many missions this time?
20.
Of which you play again 7?
I think so.
Right.
6 or 7. I believe it's still 7 long.
Right.
3 rows of 3, a final row of 3. Oh, maybe it's 6, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it is 6.
But still plenty of replay value.
Oh, God, yeah. And this one, the way that you can decide which scenario to pursue next is actually a little bit more freeform.
I get the impression that in Scouring Sands, there are a set of scenarios which are second in the trip, and then another set which are third. If I'm reading it right, having not run through it enough times to know.
Yeah, loosely, Scouring Sands is kind of three. If you imagine a tree of all the decisions you can make, it's basically 3 columns wide for most of the adventure, and there's some cross pollination.
Yeah.
But you can, because of the way the keywords work in Aces, some of the decisions you make early on kind of heavily bias you toward one path or another.
Mm-hmm.
Snowblind is a lot more nebulous in what the cause and effect of some of the things you will do are. And it's in part because the actual situation is very chaotic. your contract is you're essentially brought in as a garrison force to protect a valuable manufacturing asset. But as a result of this, the fact that the joiners and the deniers are going at it, and some of those are on both sides, part of the ghost bear forces on planet, as well as the fact that there is this lingering pirate problem that doesn't seem to be high on anyone's list of priorities to actually deal with in a permanent kind of way. It's sort of a nuisance that no one can agree on how to solve properly, because, of course, hunting pirates is well below a clanner's code of honor. That's a job for Salama.
It gets to be your problem, then, I guess.
Yep. Uh-huh. Or it can be if you choose to make it your problem. And there are some incentives for doing so, and there are some incentives for not, depending on who you talk to at what point in the adventure, what side you kind of just... you feel about how the, you know, where the situation should go.
Yeah, and again, I guess you're going to be playing the collect the keywords game to work out what happens at the end of...
Yes, although I think that's a little bit more transparent this time around. So, unlike Scouring Sands, where there are keywords that change specific things later, a lot of what happens in Snowblind is the keyword... You'll receive a keyword which is like, you supported this faction.
Right.
So you, as you play, you'll literally gain... You'll play a scenario and you'll get joiner one for supporting the joiners. And you'll play another one and you'll go, oh, I supported the pirates, or I fought pirates this time. Okay, now I have Pirate Hunter one. And as you proceed down the campaign, some of the later choices will be... they'll be presented to you, but they're keyword locked based on how much support you've given one faction or the other.
It's essentially reputation, isn't it, at this point?
A little bit, yeah. But it's a very different way of implementing keywords from the way they're done in Scouring Sands. Or rather, it's the same mechanic, but a different way of seeing it in action.
Yeah, I guess one of the things you get from writing more and more scenarios for the whole Aces game engine is you start to find different ways of, I didn't say abusing, but you know what I mean? abusing various aspects of the game engine to do things that you hadn't realized you could do before.
Absolutely. Yeah, we had a pretty lengthy jam session way back in the genesis of this project. Like, before Scouring Sands was written, there was a design document that I created for Dylan, actually, who was doing all of the choose-your-own-adventure, like, plotting, basically. I didn't want to touch the high-level narrative. I'm not a particularly capable storyteller at that scale. There are some structural things that I wanted to make sure, like, hey, Dylan, like, I want this campaign to be satisfying end-to-end. I'm a little out of my depth here. What is a good story you would tell in a choose-your-own-adventure framework? If you can figure that out, I can give you all of the plug-and-play Lego blocks to stick into this framework that you can then say, it should be this scenario for this moment in the story. It should be this scenario for that one. And so, while he was doing the choose-your-own-adventure structuring, or rather, before he was able to do it, we had a jam session where we basically brainstormed this document of, I think it was probably close to 100 scenario hooks, just like a 2-sentence summary and like, here's a bullet point for a cool way we could use keywords or waypoints in this scenario. And that was it. There's this gigantic design document. We just brainstormed everything we could think of. And then when Dylan went through to write the choose your own adventure kind of hookups for how the campaign unfolds, he was able just to look at this master list, and we numbered them all. And he just said, like, oh, at this point, this is scenario 37. here's how it starts. Here's the lead-in for the fiction. You're then going to play scenario 37. Josh will figure out exactly what that looks like. And then we know, as a result of the outcome of scenario 37, if you did, you know, the thing or not the thing, here are the keywords you get, here's how it plugs into the rest of the campaign, and here's how it might affect things later. So he was able to literally do, like, the whole narrative campaign design without ever playing or touching the actual game mechanics. It was really cool. But from me, it was like receiving a design Bible.
Yeah. Are you discovering more as you go?
Yeah, there are some, for sure. And not only that, but there are, having now done two full boxes, there are some design concepts that we had at that stage that seemed cool and didn't quite work as well as we wanted. And there are some that, as we were designing them and fleshing them out into full scenarios and playing them with waypoints, there are some things that worked better than I thought. And so that original sketch of like, oh, it's the scenario with this mechanic for waypoints. Some of those have been massaged and, you know, remixed or plugged in or whatever since then.
Mm-hmm. Sweet.
But yeah.
So, that's pretty much snowblind, I think, isn't it? Did I probably see June, July is where we're looking at the moment?
I heard from the Catalyst Game Labs Tuesday Newsday, July 1st, but I don't put any stock in that because I know how volatile international shipping and fulfillment is.
Volatile international world at the moment, let's face it.
Sure. Yeah, we can say that.
Yes. Okay. That's
actually, there's one other. There's actually a couple. There's actually one other thing in Snowblind I think that's worth mentioning.
Go on.
Maybe two even. And both of them are mechanical things. One of the ideas we originally had for Aces was, hey, because it's a standalone box that plugs into the Alpha Strike starter box, you get basically the Aces rulebook in it. So like you can buy Snowblind having never played Scouring Sands, add in the Alpha Strike box set, and you can play. It's not an expansion to Scouring Sands, it's another standalone expansion to Alpha Strike. And part of the, we kind of realized originally, like, oh, you know, you're going to just reprint the Aces rulebook in there. But the actual benefit here is now that we've seen some public playtesting, or not playtesting, but public playing of and feedback on Scouring Sands, is that there were some quality of life things that we actually just were able to roll into the rulebook.
Ooh.
That comes in Snowblind. So it's almost like an Aces version 1.1 rulebook.
Do we get to know what regards. Kind of things those are?
A couple of them were addressing FAQ questions about how things like... There were a couple of things that were just not as well explained in the Aces book as I would have liked. So some of the examples got clarified.
Right.
All of the actual like calculations for how to resolve Aces cards and stuff, those diagrams got updated with new cards and like new mechs from this set. But they're largely the same content. The one substantial change that is in the rulebook that comes from Snowblind is, oh, the infantry barracks rule.
Oh,
so if you've played or if you've seen Hotspot's Hinterlands for Chaos Campaign, there is a different rule set in there that changes how many points you have to pay for infantry. Or rather, it makes them less likely to be completely killed.
Mm-hmm.
So you can field a single, if you add an infantry to your missionary command, you pay its PV in your setup, but that unit represents like a small detachment of a larger barracks. So you can field either one, two, or three stands of infantry. And depending on how many of them die in a given scenario, there are penalties, but like you can field one squad of infantry kind of forever.
Mm-hmm.
And in Scouring Sands, if you did that, there'd be a really good chance that they would be counted as truly destroyed because the salvage check for like, oh, they were destroyed in the scenario, let's see if we can field them again. That salvage check's really high.
Yeah.
The barracks rule really eliminates that.
Is the intent that you can retrofit that Scaring Sands if you want to?
Absolutely.
Right.
Yep.
Cool.
This Aces book is kind of becomes the Aces rule book now.
Right. Oh, that's sweet. Like that. Okay, another reason to buy Snowblind as if I needed more.
Oh, and you're going to get asset cards for Fulcrums.
Woo!
Because we literally forgot to put them in Scouring Sands. And someone complained about it. And we were like, yeah, you know, for the price of putting two more cards in this box, we should just do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, excuse me.
That's funny.
Boy, yeah, that'll amuse a few people, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm, yeah. They've actually, even the cards have the Scouring Sands set icon in the corner. Like, they're the only cards in the box with a different set icon. You're like, what? What is this?
All right, sweet. Nice. So,
yeah,
that's Snowblind. Can we get, I mean, we got a little sneak, last time we talked, we got a little sneak peek into Snowblind while you were, Scaring Sands was out. So, can we have a little sneak peek into the next one?
Yeah, I'm not sure how much...
Winning smile.
I know Randall revealed one of the models that's coming in that set.
I may have missed that.
Didn't show it, but mentioned it by name. Yeah, we're getting the... I don't remember how many tons it is. It's a heavy mech. It's a Liao heavy mech called... It is a Lao Hu.
Ooh.
So it's a Civil War era.
Yeah.
Heavy mech that has, I believe, either a regular Gauss or a heavy Gauss, I think. Mm-hmm. As a giant arm cannon.
Yeah, it's got flak, the AS version is flak, so... Ooh, and there's a C3 version as well. That'll be fun.
Yep. Yeah, there's a lot of really good variants of it. And even the existing art is actually pretty funky. I like the way it looks. But we needed something to function as a... I don't know if it's really the command mech for the Liao forces in this campaign, but it certainly shows up as one in a couple of the scenarios.
There's even a 3-4 variant with ECM and stealth. That's just nice to have. That's almost just a nice to have, I think.
That is the later era one.
Yeah.
That's like a Jihad era variant. That is one of the two cards. That's the 4E, I believe. That's the back of the stat card.
Nice.
You get the 3L and the 4E.
Okay.
So, yes, if you are looking forward to fighting against a TMM2 with stealth and ECM, Capellan clan, Capellan stealth mech, then that awaits you in your future in Wrath and Uprising.
They're a real shock the first time you come across them as stealth mechs.
Yeah, they can be for sure, especially at long range.
If you're not expecting the effect of stealth and suddenly you're like, why can't I hit this thing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if they outskill you, the problem's just even worse.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I shoot you on 10s, and you're hitting me on 6s? What?
What? That's just not fair.
Yep.
Cool.
Yeah, they're Capellans. They deserve that. That's their playbook.
I'm guessing somewhat more braided and complex plot than Scaring Sands was?
A little. The planet you fight over in... Wrath and Reprisal has a guerrilla force running around. So you get to kind of try and play whack-a-mole against them. My sort of capsule summary, if you're a BattleTech fan, is imagine the plot of Mercenary Star, the second Grey Death Legion novel. But imagine that plot if you are playing as the Draconis Combine. And Grayson Carlisle is running amok in the jungle and causing you grief.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, a very different sort of style of campaign. It's a garrison contract, just like Snowblind. But instead of all these weird political ramifications and, like, shifting alliances and stuff, you're trying to fight and quash an enemy that you can't get a good grip on. They will not engage you. They will only make your life difficult. And so there's a bunch of cool things that happen, and of course, eventually it comes to a head, and there's a big set-piece battle at the end. But very much a different flavor, again, of what's going on. And there's a little bit of a mystery thread in that one, too. There's a bunch of... I think there is actually a good ending in that one.
All right.
You can only get if you've kind of pieced together the whole mystery, which is neat.
Nice. That sounds really fun. It's reminding me...
And again, a different biome, too, right? All new mechs, all new Aces decks, new set of cardboard terrain for a new kind of planetary biome.
Which is?
That one is... I've talked about it a little bit. I would describe it as the Pacific Northwest of the U.S., so very heavily wooded and very green.
Ooh, nice. It's reminding me of... listeners to the podcast will know I'm a bit of a 12th Vegan Rangers nut. They being my favorite Innosphere mystery unit. They got stuck at one point on a good forsaken little hole in the Sarna March called El Kentucky, which is basically a jungle planet riddled with the Tongs, gorillas. and I suspect I might be... Once I get to the point where I feel like I can have a play with aces and generate scenarios, I think that's one thing that might make a fun aces scenario. It sounds like it would be very similar to Wrath and Reprisal in some ways. It's 12 VR trying to nail jelly to a wall.
Yeah, that's... there are definitely scenarios in this third box that have that feel.
Cool. And then the fourth box is... I'm losing track here.
It's called Controlled Burn.
Controlled Burn, which is... Oh, that's, of course, that's the one where you get to go Raven Alliance. Because I said so.
Yep. Yep. And that contract is, again, a very different tone. The Federated Suns is completely spent, having just kicked the Combine out of their former territory and collapsing that Dragon's Tongue invasion corridor that went straight to New Avalon.
Yeah.
And so they're pretty well spent. The Prince's champion, Eric Sandoval, kind of has no resources left to deal with a Snow Raven problem I manufactured and stuffed into lore. Well, you know, if Alaric Ward is busy forming the third Star League, and it's the best thing since the second Star League, or I guess since the original, really. If he's off doing that and waving this banner, and he's the Ilklan now, and we just sent three galaxies to help him, you know, wreck face on the surrounding area around Terra and push back the Liao advance. If he's off doing all that and having a great time, why are we just sitting over here on our hands in the Outworlds Alliance with our fourth Snowraven galaxy and doing nothing? You know, we should probably bring the light of the Star League to more planets in our own backyard.
Let's be bad guys.
Yeah, a little bit. Hey, there's an opportunity. We should take that opportunity, right? Yeah. Says one Snowraven to another. Yeah.
Absolutely. So, do you know what's going to happen after that? Is there a sort of intent to keep popping Aces scenarios up every so often? Is it going to become the kind of thing where you've got enough cards now and enough tokens, etc., that you can just say, here's a PDF?
That is one of the options we've talked about. There are a bunch of things that have been discussed, but I think until we're really finished with the fourth box set, none of them are really going to move forward like that. That first run of four sets really just has to get done, because you're right. It is a hefty sandbox of stuff.
Yeah. I think once,
like, you've I could imagine if you run an RPG or just a friendly Alpha Strike campaign at all on the regular, and you feel like you need a couple of scenarios to throw in there, well, I've got good news for you. There are 80 to choose from, you know?
Yeah.
Which cardboard terrain would you like for which planetary biome? You have a selection.
Yeah.
You already have four opposing forces and some cardboard tokens cooking to do stuff with.
And I think by then, we did this. One of the things we did bounce briefly on the previous podcast was the idea of perhaps an AC design Bible for the GM.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about that too. Just having absorbed the way that Aces plays for 80 scenarios is the kind of thing that, you know, one of the things I like is the fact that as a GM, I don't always want to be in an adversarial role with my players for that kind of thing, and being able to leave let them hate the card deck rather than me.
Yep.
Is brilliant in my book.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that makes all the difference. It really does.
Yeah, I think I should tell you a lovely little story. We were the UK's one of the two UK's huge war game shows was last weekend. The Salute, rather than UK Games Expo, yes, which is a real biggie. Been running Alpha Strike demo all day and had the box of Aces and the box of every table. Had someone come up, never played one of a couple of the video games. You should know this background.
Sure.
We taught them Aces. We taught them Alpha Strike. And then explained Aces, and I suddenly, and because of some of the things he'd been saying, I said, "Do you play X-Wing? Yeah. Have you come across Heroes of the Atari class?" And he went, "Oh hell yeah!" I said, "Right, you need to buy this."
Yeah. Let me just give you a shove down the water slide. Bye.
Bye. Have fun. Unfortunately, by that point, Leisure Games, who were the only people who'd actually got any BattleTech in stock, had sold out of everything, and that was in the first two and a half hours. They didn't have any Aces anyway, because it's still a bit like rocking horse poop over this side of the Atlantic. But they'd gone through an entire 6-foot shelf of Lance packs and every copy of Alpha Strike, every copy of Game of Armored Combat. I think they had two boxes of Gothic and a starter set left.
Wow. We watched them demolish an entire stack of Aces at Adepticon.
I'm not surprised.
And it's been out now for quite some time in the American market. You can get it at your local game store. It's not that hard to get. And yet, they moved an entire stack of them at Adepticon.
does not surprise. Genuinely does not surprise me. I think you've got a winner there.
That's what they're telling me.
This is good. Cool. Yeah. Right. Is there anything else we need to talk about?
I think the other... So you asked about, you know, what else we might do with Aces or where it may go beyond the four boxes. Yeah. The one conversation that we have been really driving forward, and this is actually not really even me in a design, in the designer's seat. I'm more consulting on this and just kind of helping smooth out some edges here and there. The local demo team affiliates up here, the Fox Network boys, so Paul and the rest of them who were also at Adepticon with me, they have been very interested in putting together an organized play system for Aces. And essentially what this is if you're familiar with how role-playing games are run at conventions, where it's more of a league play, or there's like an ongoing set of scenarios that you're going to play, or a specific, I guess almost like a one-shot. Yeah. You're going to run a little like RPG one-shot at a con. This is like one step above that, in the sense that it's several linked games of Aces, but as a convention event. So you want to play, you want to sign up and bring your own force, and then we've got a table with a GM, or a GM running several tables. But basically, you're going to play Aces on a brand new scenario with brand new op four, as a, you know, a three-parter campaign event.
Ooh,
at a convention. And exactly, like most people I've given this pitch to have been like, yeah, I would love that. You know, when can I buy the PDF and run it at my local store? Oh. And so there's a lot of conversations that are still happening about this. I believe, I don't know for sure if it's been greenlit for Gen Con, but I know it's something we talked about.
Just too late to get it for UK Games Expo then.
Yeah. Well, I think there's also, they need to do a little bit more development on it as well. The bones are good. They've, you know, done a bunch of stuff, but they're writing a three-part scenario that links together than kind of the way they envisioned is in some ways easier than an Aces box set, and in some ways harder. Easier because there's less of it, but harder because the scenarios kind of have to fit together in a more prescriptive way. There's no branching storyline.
No, but you still, in an ideal world, you still want to make there be some knock-on effect from how you do in the first scenario that changes the second.
Exactly.
But not enough that if you completely screw up the first scenario, the remaining two are no fun whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. You got it. So it's a fine line to walk, and there have been some interesting design discussions about that. But there's also just the question of Catalyst is very, or at least every, this conversation is like, yeah, we really want this. We're not quite sure how we want to do it or what the who does what where and when. Like, some, it's the logistical issues now of getting this thing kind of launched that we're talking through. So
I have to say that sounds fascinating. Wearing my demo agent hat, I will be first in the queue for that one.
All right, well, yeah, I hope we can actually get that in your hands at some point, because I think
that would be awesome.
Be great.
Lovely. Right. That's awesome. I can't wait. So there we go. My guest once again, and it's been an absolute pleasure to have him back, has been Josh Turkson.
Thank you, Mike. It's been awesome talking to you as well. Looking forward to getting Snowblind in your hands.
On to the usual closing bits, namely events and the directory. So, got a few events for you, one of which has passed since I added it, and that is Campaign MK, which was the Big Milton Keynes War Games show. Now, the guys from the Box Battletech group were in running that. There was some Alpha Strike, there was some Classic, there was even some Aces. And a good time was had by all. A couple of other new events. There is, again, courtesy of Battletech Box, they're running a big Clan League event, or event series, actually, in their usual venue. which is to say, which actually not in their usual venue. It's Players Paradise, Newport Pagnell. And this is basically 10k BV, 5 mechs, 40 points pulse cap, 3052 clan tech. And there is basically a series of events there, starting May-June, runs through till August. Contact details are, as ever, on the events page or the sidebar on the website. And then Shrapnel of the Cardiff Battletech persuasion is running a summer competition on the 4th of July at Firestorm in Cardiff. Three rounds of, I quote, high-octane classic Battletech. Sounds like fun. Further information on the Facebook group, and there is a tournament pack as well. Finally, we've got one more directory entry, which has actually been around for quite a while, thanks to my previous guest, Nat, we finally noticed that it wasn't on the directory and really ought to be, and that is Battleground Gaming, who are based in Birmingham-ish. Specifically, they are based in Kings Norton B30 on the Waterside Business Park. They run Battletech games every Thursday evening and Saturday, and they actually have Battletech stock. So if you're in the Birmingham area, you know where to go. Which only remains for me to say, I'll see you at UK Games Expo. You know what to do if you want a set of dice, and have fun and roll good dice. Tales from the Periphery is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-alike 4.0 international license. In short, give us some credit, don't make money out of it, and if you make an adaptation of it, you must share it under the same license. Have fun!